It's dangerous for a boy so small to lead the oxen, Dietrich said to his farmer. That was how her husband was trampled. A roll of distant thunder echoed from the Katharinenberg, and Dietrich glanced up at a cloudless sky. Herwig spat into the dirt.
Thunder weather, he said, though I spelt no rain. But 'twas a horse that trampled Metzger, not an ox.
Greedy fool, worked the beast too long. Sundays too, though I'd not speak ill of the dead. Your ox, he comes on steady, but a horse can take a mind a rear and kick. That's why I drive oxen.
Hey! Jakob! Heso! Pull!
Herwig's wife goaded Heso, the lead ox, and the team of six began to plod forward. The wet, heavy clay slid off the plow's moldboard, forming a ridge on either side of the furrow.
I'd help her, Herwig said with a toss of his head toward Trude. But her tongue be no sweeter nor her man's ever were. And I have my own manses to plough yet after I finish with yours, Pastor.
It was a courteous invitation to leave. So Dietrich crossed the berm to Trude's land, where her son still struggled to turn the team. Each time the ox shifted its stance, Dietrich expected the lad to be crushed underfoot. The younger boy had sat down on the ridge and was weeping from weariness, the mattock fallen from numb and bleeding fingers. Trude, meanwhile, lashed the oxen with her whip and her boy with her tongue.
Pull him by the nose, you lazy brat, she cried. Left, you doodle, to the left.
When she saw Dietrich, she turned a mud-streaked face on him.
And what do you have, priest? More useless advice like old One-Eye?
Metzger had been a surly man, given to drink in excess, though he'd been a fair ploughman. Trude hadn't his cunning at the plough, but owned a portion of his surliness. I have a fenning for you, Dietrich said, reaching into his scrip. You can hire a gartner to work the plough for you. Trude lifted her cap and swiped a hand across her red brow, leaving another streak of dirt across it.
And why should I share my wealth with some Lackland?
Dietrich wondered how his fenning had become her wealth. Nickel Langerman can use the work, and he has the strength for the plough.
So why has no one else hired him?
Dietrich thought, because he is as ill-tempered as yourself, but held his tongue from prudence. Trude, perhaps suspecting the imminent withdrawal of the fenning, snatched it from Dietrich's fingers, saying,
I'll speak to him tomorrow. He lives in the hut by the mill.
That is the man. Klaus uses him in the mill when he has the work.
We'll see if he's as good as your praises make him out. Melchior, have you gotten the team straight yet? Can you do nothing right?
Trude dropped the reins and strode to the head of the team and yanked the leads from her son's hands. Leaning into them, she shortly had the team aligned and shoved the reins back at Melchior.
That's how it's done. Now, wait until I have the plough in hand. God in heaven, what did I ever do to deserve such goffs? Peter, you've missed some clods. Pick up that mattock.
Peter hopped to his feet before his mother could yank his head about as she had the lead ox. Dietrich picked his way to the road and returned to the village. He thought he might visit Nickel to warn him.
You do not seem a happy man, Gregor announced as Dietrich passed the mason's yard.
Gregor had a great stone slab set up on his trestle, and he and his sons were working it down.
I've been to Trude in the field, Dietrich explained.
Ha! Sometimes I think old Metzger threw himself under the horse to escape her.
I think he was drunk and fell. The mason grinned without humor.
The prime mover is the same in either case.
He waited to see if Dietrich appreciated his use of philosophical language, and then he laughed. His sons, not understanding what a prime mover was, understood that their father had told a jest, and laughed with him.
That reminds me, Gregor added, Max has been looking for you. The hare wants to speak to you up in the hof.
On what matter did he say?
The leper colony.
Ah. Gregor worked the stone, striking his chisel with hard, precise strokes. Chips flew. Then Gregor squatted to study the level, running his hand along it.
Is it dangerous having lepers so close by? He asked.
The rot spreads by touch, so the ancients wrote. That is why they must live apart.
Ah, no wonder Klaus is in such a state.
Gregor straightened and wiped his hand with a rag tucked into his leather apron.
He fears Hilda's touch, or so I've heard.
The mason looked at him from under lowered brows. So does everyone else. She's had no riding this last month, the poor woman.
Is that a bad thing?
Half the village may explode from lust. Was it not Augustine who wrote that a lesser evil may be tolerated to prevent a greater?
Gregor, I shall make a scholar of you yet. The mason crossed himself.
Huh! May heaven forbid such a thing.
The afternoon sun had not yet reached the slit window, and Manfred's scriptorium lay partly in shadows, undispelled by the torches. Dietrich sat before the writing-table while Manfred cut in two a Roman apple and proffered half.
I could order you to return to the Lazaretto, the Lord said.
Dietrich took a bite from his apple and savored the tartness. He looked at the candle prickets, at the silver inkstand, at the leering beasts on the arms of Manfred's cural chair. Manfred waited a moment longer. Then he laid the knife aside and leaned forward.
But I need your wits, not your obedience, he laughed. They have been in my woods long enough now that I ought to take rent of them.
Dietrich tried to imagine Everard collecting rents from Herr Gescherz. He told Manfred what the servant had said, that their cart was broken, and they could not leave.
The hare rubbed his chin. Perhaps that is just as well.
I thought you wanted them gone, Dietrich said carefully.
So I had, Manfred answered. But we mustn't be too hasty. There are things I must know about these strange folk. Have you heard the thunder?
All afternoon, an approaching storm.
Manfred shook his head.
No, that crack is made by a potifer. The English had them at Calais, so I know the sound of it. Max agrees. I believe your lepers have black powder, or they know the secret of it.
But there is no secret, Dietrich said. Brother Berthold discovered it in Freiburg back in Bacon's day. He had the ingredients from Bacon, though not the proportions, which he learned by trial and error.
It would be the errors that concern me, Manfred said dryly.
Berthold was called the Black because he had been singed by his powder so often. Occam had presented Buridan with a copy of Bacon made by the monks at Merton, directly from the master's copy, and Dietrich in turn had read it avidly. It is the nitre that does the violence, as I recall, together with sulphur to make it burn, and— Dietrich stopped and looked at Manfred.
And charcoal, Manfred finished blandly. Charcoal of willow is best, I've heard. And we have lately lost our charcoal makers, not so?
You expect these Krenken to make black powder for you? Why?
Manfred leaned back against the stones. He twined his fingers under his chin, resting his elbows on the arms of the chair.
Because the gorge is a natural route between the Danube and the Rhine, and Falcon Rock sits like a stopper in a pipe. Trade has dried to a trickle, and with it my own dues, he smiled. I mean to bring down Falcon Rock.
Dietrich agreed that von Falkenstein, despoiler of pilgrims and holy nuns, was in want of a reining in, yet he wondered if Manfred realized that enough black powder to bring down Falcon Rock was more than enough to obliterate Burg Hochwald. Dietrich contented himself with the thought that the art was a difficult one requiring a sure touch. If the Krenken could handle the mixture safely, and Manfred learned it of them, how long before all Christendom knew? What worth, then, Burg or Schildmauer? In his mind, ranks of peasants bore Bacon's fire lances across a battlefield, while de Vigevano's armored war carts hurled balls of stone from immense potifer. Bacon had described small parchment tubes that his friend William Rubruck had brought from Cathay, and which exploded with great noise and flash. If a device of large size were made, the Franciscan had written in his Opus Tertius, no one could withstand the noise and blinding light. And if the parchment were replaced by metal, the violence of the explosion would be much greater. Bacon had been a man of great and disturbing visions. Such devices planted on the battlefield could destroy the chivalry of an entire nation. Entering his quarters, Dietrich saw that the hour candle was out. He placed some tinder in a flash pan and ignited it from a flint. Perhaps, some day,
An artisan might fashion a mechanical clock small enough to fit inside a room.
Then instead of forgetting to light the candle, he could forget to lift the counterweights.